You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Call it the butterfly fart effect. That's what Walter Matthau told Barbara Streisand she had less talent than. And surprise, their mutual dislike did no favors for their on-screen May-December romance in Hello, Dolly. Then again, neither did director Gene Kelly's weird staging. Or the terrible lip-syncing. Or Streisand's casting. Yeah, we're going there. Still, a big glossy movie musical starring Streisand near the peak of her powers with that Jerry Herman score? Maybe Hello, Dolly deserves another look. I'm Mark Pikert. I'm a little lumpy, but I ring. And this is Movie Musical Madness, all dolled up with nowhere to go. Joining me today is a special guest, one I traveled all the way to a Malibu basement mall to recruit, Michael Urie.
Hello.
Oh, Michael Urie.
Oh, we will have words about this version of Hello, Dolly that you so distest because I think it is terrific.
Do you?
Yes. It is a wonderful film. It is grandeur. It is spectacle. It is overblown. It is perhaps too much, but definitely worthy and wonderful. So wonderful woman.
So you're never bored during the 148-minute running time.
When Put On Your Sunday Clothes enters its 10th verse, I just buckle up and listen closer.
You know, I've always wanted to meet the people who did all those Jerry Herman 20-verse songs at the end of a number, because, my God, you think about the title song of MAME. They're hitting some insane note at the end of MAME.
They just keep changing the key.
And they just, all died every night. They had a new cast every night. That's equity before equity, guys.
I know. Well, that's, you can't get away with that now.
No, God, yeah, no. That's why MAME's never been revived on Broadway.
And I think there's only one key change in Six.
Mm.
I haven't seen Six. I don't know.
Six is amazing. There is that, six I can't key wait. Change. Yeah, I loved it.
Oh, I can't wait. I haven't seen it.
Not since Grand Horizons have I loved a show as much this season.
Oh, someone says, as always happens when you're in a limited run, someone says, when do you close? And you have to say, Sunday. We already did. It's gone. You missed it.
No. But who knows when this podcast will air? It could be revived.
Maybe by the time this podcast airs, I'll be playing Jamie Cromwell's role.
Oh, now that's James Cromwell for people who aren't friends with him.
Sorry, did I drop that name?
It's okay. I have a big bucket for it. Let me grab it for you. All right, Michael Urie, let me set a scene for you.
Yes, please.
It's 1964.
Yeah.
Hello, Dolly. Opens on Broadway, the St. James Theater. Carol Channing already had one iconic role with Lorelei Lee in Gentlemen for Blondes. Ooh. She got a second one, Dolly Gallagher Levi. Mm. Down the street at the Winter Garden, a young upstart named Barbara Streisand is starring on Broadway in Funny Girl as Fanny Bryce. Ooh, they vie for the Tony. Who gets the Tony? Who gets the Tony? It's Carol Channing.
Carol Channing gets the Tony.
Carol Channing got that Tony.
That's right.
But who got Dolly in the film version?
Barbara.
Yes.
Barbara got it.
Good job.
How many, but 6 or 7 years later? 1970?
They filmed in 68.
When
then they had to sit on it until...
Right, because of the Vietnam War.
No.
Wait.
They had to sit on the movie until 1969 because David Merrick, that old rascal, had a clause in the movie sale contract that said, you can't release this movie if the Broadway show is still running.
Oh, my God.
And the Pearl Bailey production was running in 1960.
When they were ready to release the film.
And so Fox had to spend another $1 to $2 million for a buyout so they could rush this into theaters.
Oh, really? Wait, they had to buy David Merrick out?
They had to pay like a penalty to release the movie before 1971.
Wow.
So it was, if you cannot release it before 1971, if the show is still running.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
And
Merrick.
Thank God they did, because the world deserved to see this motion picture.
That movie belonged in the
60s. It's 1969. Other movies released that year include Easy Rider, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Okay.
And Sweet Charity.
Oh, Bob Fosse.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, good job.
Bob Fosse, he directed that.
He did.
That was his first, right?
Yeah.
His first movie.
Yeah. Well, he directed it, but Gwen Verdon choreographed it, as we know from Fosse.
I saw that, of course. Wow, that's so interesting. Because Hello, Dolly feels so much like a 1950s musical movie. When you think about, like, you know, what it it feels like a great big musical from the 1950s, not a musical from like the hazy Vietnam War 60s, mid 60s. I mean, those two things, when you imagine, I mean, Easy Rider is the smallest movie in history and it's opened the same year as the biggest movie.
Yeah. So this apparently cost as much money as Cleopatra to make.
Oh my gosh. Really?
And it didn't make as much money at the box office.
Wow. It was a flop, right?
It made money at first and then it stopped making money. And the critics were like, ooh, this doesn't work because, you know what? I'm going to say it. I'm not a fan of Hello, Dolly.
Oh.
The show.
Oh.
Yeah.
From the get.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm not a homosexual, so I feel free to say that. I'm sorry for misleading anyone who thought I was a homosexual.
No, I didn't think that. Nope. I didn't think that at all.
Nope. I'm just a simple heterosexual from Texas.
Who runs Playbill.
Runs Playbill and loves Lorne McCall.
Wait, you're from
movies.
Texas?
Yeah.
I'm from Texas.
We've talked about it.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, this is cool.
Awkward. We've met.
not in person. Well, I don't know. Does chat roulette count?
Okay.
You whiz by so fast.
I have many threads that I want to offshoot. Is it okay to like jump in on some
well, I would
tangents?
Like to I would like to defend my statement about disliking Hello, Dolly first.
Okay,
I don't want to just let that lie there.
Okay, yeah.
It's like Walter Matthau's performance. Rim shot. Special effect. I do not love Hello, Dolly because I do not buy her wanting to marry Horace Vandergelder.
Uh-huh.
And I think that it does a disservice to the character because she is such an entity unto herself that to imagine her tethered to this like sad sack, like, no time off for you.
Right, right.
This Scrooge without redemption.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh no, I don't want to see you squandering your light and your talent out in Yonkers. I've lived in Yonkers. It's not fun.
Right.
You needed the bright lights of 14th Street, Dolly.
Yeah.
But don't
you think she deserves $500,000?
No, because she seems like she's doing okay. Did you see those gowns?
Well, yes, I saw the gowns, but they seemed old.
Oh.
And
older than Streisand.
Well, her gowns don't seem old. But when I think of her, I mean, I don't think, because also I don't really think the movie is so different than the show simply because it's Streisand and not Carol Channing or Bette Midler or Bernadette. You know, it's or Ethel Merman or, you know, like Streisand was like 20.
She was 27. She was the same age as the young couples. She was the same age as Michael Crawford.
So it's like you can't, like whenever I watch Hello, Dolly, I imagine and she's on screen. I don't imagine 27-year-old Barbara Streisand. I imagine, frankly, me as Barbara Streisand in Byron Seller. That's what I always hear and see.
Even as a child.
Even as a child.
Wow.
She was old to me because like not old, but like she was middle-aged to me because, you know, she was middle-aged when I was a child. So even when I saw her as a young woman, and my mom loves Barbara Streisand, so I grew up with a lot of Streisand.
Yeah.
So like even watching her as a young woman, I see the middle-aged woman from her concert in Las Vegas when she came back in 94 or whatever that was. Like it's always been that Barbara to me. Because that was my first impression of Barbara, was that concert.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, middle-aged then. And so she's always been sort of middle-aged to me. So to me, she's always been the right. But I can recognize that the Dolly she plays is completely different than any other Dolly because she's so youthful.
But what's interesting is it's her second movie.
After Funny Girl.
She shows up.
Which she and Walter co-won the Oscar for.
Yes, with right. Catherine Hepburn.
She's a co-Oscar.
The Lion in Winter.
Yeah.
That's my Catherine Hepburn.
Yeah. Oh, it showed.
No, it's really good when you explain who it is. Well, that's the mark of a good impression.
Because of the nature of podcasts, you couldn't see the shaky head. But it was uncanny.
What's that Joan Rivers quote? I'm on the Katharine Hepburn diet. I only eat as much food as stays on my fork by the time it gets to my mouth. Oh. We can cut that. Jane. Oh. I love a comeback reference. Jane, cut this whole thing. No, but what's interesting is you see Barbara Streisand in this movie, in this role that she is not really right for.
No.
Which she's admitted. She said that she kind of regrets taking it because she was too young to play a glamorous middle-aged widow.
Yeah.
Shocking. But she's already there. Her persona, her stage presence, her charisma is already there, is already set. She is giving a really great comedy performance.
Oh, yeah.
In a really badly directed movie where no one is on the same page as she is.
Right.
And she is absolutely right. She has speed. She has daffiness. She has everything that role needs. And everyone else is acting as if they're in some operetta.
But is it possible that everyone else is in the same movie and she's in a different movie?
Yes, but I would rather watch her movie. Uh-huh. And that's what led her to direct Yentl. I don't know if that's true or not.
She tried to take a code, you know, when she did Star is Born, she tried to take a director credit from that director whose name I can't think of, but
exactly.
She spent so much time, you know, she felt like she was put so much of the work as a director into that movie that she deserved a credit and asked for one.
And if she were a man, she would have gotten it.
Maybe. I don't know. Giving the star a director credit after the movie's been shot, even a man.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened?
I don't know.
I don't know.
We're not here to talk about men. That's like a movie musical podcast. My God.
I mean, obviously, like she would, if she was a man, she would have had a very different career, though. I mean,
she would have made many more movies.
Oh yeah, she would have, and she would have done different kinds of movies. She would have been able to like make action movies, and I mean, she would have done all that stuff.
But I also think what's so interesting is at this point in her career, she had a reputation as being a kook. Oh, she's so kooky. She's
clowny.
Running around in vintage clothes and feather boas, and she's a freak. Walter Matthau called her a freak of nature, like a boa constrictor.
Oh,
he was like, she got famous too fast. She doesn't have the talent to back it up. She is a freak of nature that people pay money to come and watch. But what I find so fascinating about this movie and this performance is there's a real push-pull between this very old-fashioned musical and her very 1970s energy.
Yeah.
Like there's a real 60s, 70s energy to Barbara Streisand that we think of when we think of The Way We Were or the comedies that she did.
Yeah. Owl and Pussycat.
And Owl and Pussycat and Up the Sandbox. And that is there in this, but underneath Irene Sheriff's Oscar winning gowns.
Yes.
And the giant wig.
Yeah.
The largest wig I've ever seen is something that Charles Bush would deem too much.
Yeah.
And so you have this force of nature kind of going up against Walter Matthau, who hated her.
Yeah.
And everyone hated everyone on this movie.
Yeah. It was an unpleasant. My understanding is that it was a tough set. But it was also, it's a tough time in the world.
Yeah.
We're in a very controversial war, and there are people being assassinated all the time.
They were filming during RFK's assassination.
Literally, okay, literally they shot the day that RFK was assassinated. And I heard this story from Tammy Toon.
Oh, who?
Tammy Toon, who played Ambrose Kemper in that film.
He did, yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. He's Ambrose.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said that the day that RFK was shot, they were shooting and they had to scrap the whole day because Walter couldn't shoot because he was so upset. And so they ended up shooting a different scene. You know, the scene where Ambrose and Ermengarde and Dolly climb up a ladder into the second floor window.
Oh, yeah.
They sneak into the house, yeah. Horace's house, and they climb up a ladder into the second story window. So that was done, you know, practically on a real, with a real ladder, really going up to the second story. And before they shot it, Gene Kelly pulled Tommy Toon aside. And this is all, and they hadn't planned it because it was, they had to shuffle the schedule,
right,
because Walter was too upset to shoot. And so Gene Kelly pulled Tommy Toon aside and said, you listen to me, damn it. You're going to get up that ladder first and you're going to climb in there and then you're going to turn around and you're going to pull her in, because if we lose her, we're all fucked. That's the movie. If we lose her, that's the movie. And so Tommy was like, okay, I'll do it. Yes, I'll get up there fast. And he was like so nervous. Like he didn't want to lose Barbara. So he climbs up the ladder really, really quickly. He climbs in the window and he turns around and he grabs her by the fingers to pull her in. And she was wearing gloves and he only got the very tips of her fingers. And she goes, ow. And so he was like, oh, I'm losing her. I got to hold on tighter. So he held on even tighter. Ow. Stop. We have to stop. And they cut and they stop and she stops. And he had only grabbed fingernail. He couldn't tell. I think it's okay that I'm telling this story. But he had only grabbed fingernail because he couldn't tell where her fingers ended because she was wearing these little dainty gloves. And of course, her nails are famously real. I mean, who knows if they're still real.
And really long.
And super long. So long enough to be mistaken for fingers. And so they stopped. She went away. Now they can't shoot anything. She went to her trailer. And Gene Kelly was like, don't worry, kid. You did the right thing. I hate those nollies. They're not Dolly at all. Something like that. And
it's a good Gene Kelly.
And finally, later, she came back. He felt terrible. And Tommy was like, I'm so, so sorry. I'm sorry, Barbara. I had no idea. Are your nails okay? And Barbara said, they're damaged. That was her response. They're damaged. Not don't worry about it, but don't worry about it. It's not your fault. But
well,
they're damaged.
They were damaged. And what did Tommy Toon do?
I think he just tucked his tail between his legs and kept tapping. You know, I mean, I think that was that. But
now he also played the ladder in that scene, correct?
Yeah. So she was fine. Let's face it. She was getting up that ladder because he was playing both parts.
Yeah.
But I didn't get any other stories out of him, but that one was good. And it sort of made me think, oh, that was a tough set.
I mean, Michael Crawford and Matthau stopped speaking because they went to the racetrack and there was a horse called Hello Dolly. And Michael Crawford's like, oh, you know, I think that we should bet on this. He's British.
Yeah.
And Walter Matthau said, I'm not going to bet on that horse because it reminds me of Streisand. And so Michael Crawford's like, I'm going to. And he bet on the horse. The horse won. And Walter Matthau refused to speak to him for the rest of filming.
Wow.
Because he won on the Hello Dolly horse.
Matthau seems like he was a bit of a difficult person.
He apparently complained to Fox producer Daryl F. Zanuck, who I'm sure everyone remembers from Smash on NBC.
Yeah, sure.
He had a whole song in Smash. I think Mark Kudish maybe played him.
In the musical within Smash.
In Bombshell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Walter Matthau was like, you know... Barbara Streisand getting all the attention. I don't like it. I just won an Oscar 2 years ago.
Sounds like Gene Kelly.
They were famously mistaken for each other vocally a lot. It made directing the movie extremely complicated.
Action, what, Walter? No, that wasn't me.
And so Daryl F. Zanuck looks at him and goes, what do you want me to say, Walter? It's not called Hello, Walter.
Well, I heard that Barbara said of Hello Dolly that Walter thought it should have been called Hello Walter. I heard another great Walter Matthau story from Drew Jogi, who you've had on this podcast.
We love Drew. Friend of the podcast.
Friend of the pod, FOP, fellow FOP.
In so many ways.
Drew Jogi said that Walter Matthau was visiting Auschwitz. And I know, it's so funny, right? Walter Matthau was visiting Auschwitz, you know, a somber occasion, and he was touring, you know, as you do. And this person came up and says, "Oh my God, you're Walter Matthau." And he's like, "Yes, yes, I am." And he's like, "Oh, a huge fan." And he's like, "Thank you. Thank you so much." He's like, "Wow, it's so cool. It's so cool to meet you." And he's like, "I appreciate that. I always nice to meet a fan." And he's like, "Hey, could I get a photo with you?" And Matthau's like, "You know, I don't think it's really appropriate today here. So, I'm sorry. I'm going to say no." And the guy's like, "Okay. Whatever," and like goes off. And then, you know, they keep touring. And later the guy comes back up to Matthau and he's like, "Hey, Matthau, I just want you to know you ruined Auschwitz for me." Oh, I love that. I don't know where Drew heard that, but oh, I love that story.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Well, so Walter Matthau just ruined everything. So I want to talk about...
One,
the number of musical numbers in this movie that are filmed as if they're in a rodeo stadium.
Yes.
Where it's just a ring of seats and then a giant empty center ring.
Yeah.
Where for the Waiters Ballet, like Harmonia Gardens, what is all this? It's insane. Busby it's insane
Berkeley.
To me.
It's like it's shot like a Busby Berkeley movie,
but with nothing from above.
Right, except nothing from above. But you know, like those big stage movie musicals.
But
like, it happens before the parade passes by. It happens in Put on Your Sunday Clothes. It happens, of course, in Hello Dolly.
I mean, Before the Parade Passes By is basically
it's a whole movie.
Gene Kelly looking at Rain on My Parade from Funny Girls, like, I'm going to do that, but on land.
Yeah.
It's just her trailing her feather boa. And
like, that impossible note she holds at the end.
Yes.
Actually impossible, right?
Yeah. Well, yes, because we haven't talked about the lip syncing in this. They filmed so much on location and so much outdoors that entire dialogue scenes
are ADR. Yeah, it's true.
And so obviously, where it feels like you're watching through a scrim or like you've had some...
Yeah.
Dayquil or something, and you're a little bit off. And you're just watching them talk.
Or you need to reboot your Apple TV.
Yes. Yeah. Like, what's going on? Let me hit pause. Well, that should I blow on the cassette? Yeah. No?
Yeah. Big old numbers. You would think, though, that Gene Kelly wouldn't want to be compared because it's such a similar number. It's such a similar final. But then again, she did it in Yentl, too. I mean, she's still, maybe it's her.
Maybe Vincent Canby in the Times called it her Streisand Sousa moment.
Oh.
Like John Philip Sousa.
John Philip Sousa, like a marching band.
Mm-hmm. Like a marching band, yeah.
In all three or in just in Hello Dolly?
No, he was saying it's one of her signatures in Hello Dolly. Like she has the big Streisand Sousa moment.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
But what's so funny is like that number, the parade number in the movie is so enormous that when I saw the Broadway show the first time, I was like, that's it?
She's just standing there.
What, they throw her a baton?
Cool.
Where's the crane shot?
Where's her boa? Why isn't she marching more?
And I guess that's what that is. It's not a big, it's actually more of an introspective number in on stage, which is wonderful and lovely. But like, I was really surprised. I was ready for some big number. The big number, I mean, Sunday Close in the Broadway show is so breathtaking.
So here's one thing that I did like about this motion picture. I loved the new opening number, Leave Everything to Me.
Yeah.
In place of I Put My Hand in There.
Yeah, that's right. Gosh, I forgot about that. It is a good number.
Now, it does sound a little bit like Come to the Supermarket in Old Beijing, which Barbara Streisand sang in one of her TV specials.
Oh, look at you.
Which Patti LuPone famously covered on her live album.
For a straight guy, you really know a lot about Barbara Streisand.
I'm like a sponge for information. I don't do anything with it, but I just love it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a real collector of information.
I know that about you. Yeah, that's really good. Wow. So do you think that she wrote that song? No, Jerry wrote that song.
No, Jerry wrote that song. And the other new song in the show is Love is Love.
Yes.
Pre-Lin-Manuel Miranda.
That's why they stopped at true.
Love is Love. they didn't know.
Is Ribbons Down My Back in the movie?
Yes.
It is. Dubbed. Yeah. Oh, she doesn't sing it?
She does not sing it. Everyone else sings, except Irene Malloy.
And that's not her voice.
No.
Who is it?
Yeah, it was some lady. It's not Lisa Kirk, and it's not Marnie Nixon. So,
now, what do you know about Jerry Herman's relationship with Carol when she didn't get the movie?
That I don't know. I know that
Carol, seems like that must have been really hard.
I know that Carol did an interview after the movie came out that said, "I felt terrible, and then I saw the movie."
Oh.
And then I saw the movie and
but
I realized.
Did she say terrible or did she say terrible?
Well, she said terrible.
Then she saw the movie and she was like,
she gave it a rage weary.
And in her book, she talks about how she won the Tony over Barbara and that the movie was a flop.
Yeah. Well, and
she gloats.
She said she saw the movie and they wanted something completely different. They wanted something that she was not going to give them.
Right.
They wanted
youth.
Youth, beauty,
youth, vigor.
And that wasn't Carol Channing.
Yeah.
Like Elaine Stritch, she was born old.
Yeah. How much older was Walter Matthau?
He was in his 40s, late 40s.
Right.
I think it was like a 23-year age difference.
And it's not just the age. It's really the temperament, because he seems 60 in that movie.
Yes. And also, just think about the technique. Like, she is kind of self-taught and intuitive, and he seems like a real stickler.
Right. Well, that's sort of like, you know, when I think about, that's sort of what why I asked if they're all in the same movie and she's in a different movie, because he definitely, you know, I saw David Hyde Pierce and Victor Garber and Lou Stadlin all play that role. I mean, we don't have anyone more Walter Matthau than Louis J. Stadlin. And so I really could see him in, I mean, like, Matthau's right for it.
Yeah.
He's just in the wrong version.
He doesn't seem comfortable.
Like If Matthau had been opposite Carol Channing, maybe it would have been a totally different movie. I mean, obviously it would have been a totally different movie, but maybe you would have loved him, is my point.
It's true.
Maybe you would have, you know, maybe that would have been the horse hoorish that you needed.
I mean, it's such a weird movie because you look at all the parts and nothing meshes. Although, you know what I did enjoy? Those tight, tight pants on Michael Crawford.
Yeah. Oh, he's dreamboaty in that movie.
So dreamboaty.
So cute.
Doing his high kicks. Michael Crawford could dance.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, Gene Kelly taught him how to dance. He didn't know how to dance.
Oh, that's right.
That's what I heard when I listened to the Michael Crawford live album.
Yeah.
He does a whole Hello Dolly thing. And he talks all about how Gene Kelly didn't really want him, but his wife thought he was cute. So he was like, my wife thinks, he's like, what I need is an attractive idiot. And my wife thinks you're attractive. And I think you're an idiot. And he said, I can't dance. And he's like, can you count to three? One, two, three. Then you can dance. Which I don't think is, I mean, I think that.
No, I think that's true.
You think that's true?
I do.
If you can count, you can dance?
Yeah.
Really?
Why not?
With Gene Kelly standing in front of you? Maybe. I mean, maybe if it's Gene Kelly teaching you how to dance.
Gene Kelly stood in front of me, I'd do more than dance.
I heard of Gene Kelly, I think it was Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, when they met, they were both like so shy and nervous.
Oh.
I think it was, Gene Kelly was like practicing putting.
And that's a golf term for anyone who's not a heterosexual.
Like, yeah, yeah. Thank you for...
No, I know that.
You know that.
No, I'll translate.
As a heterosexual.
As a heterosexual.
I think Gene Kelly was practicing his putt and Fred Astaire was on the lot or whatever. And they were, and somebody was like, we should get these two to meet. You know, they're two of the greatest dancers ever. And while they were standing, they were shy. They were both sort of like shy to meet each other. And they were just sort of looking down. And Gene Kelly like just very gently kicked one of the golf balls, and it went flying. And
the power
of his ankle. And then later, it's apparently it is said that you could see Fred Astaire somewhere else in the lot practicing kicking golf balls.
Oh.
Isn't that great?
Now, my favorite Gene Kelly story is on the set of On the Town. Frank Sinatra took one look at Gene Kelly in his sailor's outfit and turned to the wardrobe mistress and said, I'm going to need a padded ass.
Oh, my God.
Because Frank Sinatra had a very flat ass.
Gene Kelly had a bubble butt.
Gene Kelly. Oh,
I know.
There's a Tumblr dedicated to it
that
is worth checking out on a slow day at work. On your phone. I'm not saying use your work computer.
Well,
they track that.
I don't have. I mean,
you don't have a job. That's right.
I don't have a job.
Oh.
Nor would I ever get a computer at this job.
Just like Cassie in A Chorus Line.
Yeah.
Unemployed.
I haven't worked in a year. No, I haven't worked since Sunday. Thank you.
Today's Tuesday for those of you who didn't get that joke.
It's a Tuesday. Who knows what Tuesday you're listening to this on out there in podcast land.
Here's my question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that Hello Dolly the movie works as its own entity? As a movie.
You mean, and without any previous knowledge of what Hello Dolly lore is?
Yes.
Great question. I would say probably not. I would say if you don't have a love of the music and lore of, and I don't just mean the musical, but I mean knowing that like that the characters are based on a Thornton Wilder. I mean, it's too bad that revival closed, because I feel like it would have been cool if the show could have run without giant stars.
Yeah,
and you know, we could have gotten so many amazing people in and out of there.
I would have seen Jean Smart's Dolly.
Oh, yeah.
I would have seen Audra McDonald's Dolly.
Oh, yeah.
I would have seen...
Andrea Martin.
Kathleen Turner's Dolly.
Sure. I'm going with real ones, and you seem to be...
Jean Smart can sing.
Okay. Fair enough.
Like to see the gravitas that Kathleen Turner could bring to that role.
Or what about, say, hearing Kathleen Turner sing that score.
Did you just launch into a Kathleen Turner impression and then think better of it?
No, I'm working my way into a Harvey Fierstein joke.
Oh, I see. Because you were very close to a Kathleen Turner impression.
I do have a Kathleen Turner. She came to see... She came to speak to us at Juilliard when I was a student there, and she was like, never talk about people badly. Wait, is that it? Hold on. And then she was telling, and then somebody was like, is there any movie you hate you that you made that you didn't like? And she was like, yes, Switching Channels, fucking Burt Reynolds. And then somebody was like, I thought you didn't say anything bad about actors you'd worked with. And she was like, he's the exception. Something like that. It doesn't quite work, but there was not a lot of mouth movement. I know that. Like,
yeah.
But
I could only do Sarah Paulson doing Kathleen Turner.
Oh, from Studio 60?
No, from she was on Jimmy Fallon on Wheel of Impressions, and she landed on Kathleen Turner doing Slip and Slides.
Oh,
talk about Slip and Slides.
Great.
Oh, I know all about that lonely crocodile mile, Jimmy. You run, you hit a bump, you take a dive.
That's so good.
Mm.
Oh, Anyway, so, she would have been a great Dolly.
I would have watched it. And that's all the time that we have. Michael Ewing, thank you so much for going all around the town with me in this conversation.
That was fantastic.
All around the town, like a Mary Higgins Clark novel I would have read as a child. I think that's where she had multiple personalities.
Oh, uh-huh, uh-huh. That was the first in the series. And then the second book was back around the town. And then cars drive around the town. It's one of those series.
Driver around the town.
Driver, comma, around the town.
Exclamation point. Well, this is Mark Pikert. You've been listening to Movie Musical Madness. Actually, I don't know what you've been listening to, but it was a super fun episode of Movie Musical Madness. Tune in again whenever we release a new episode.
This episode of Movie Musical Madness was edited by Kyle Moore with theme music by Sunshine Music. And thank you for listening to Movie Musical Madness, part of the Broadway Podcast Network. You can find out more about the podcast and me at bpn.fm/Movie Musical Madness.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.